John, I'm really enjoying learning about dreams, and it's always been a topic that's been fascinating for me. I remember when I was in college as an undergraduate at the University of Florida working on my bachelor's degree, I took extracurricular courses on dreams, where one of the professors would actually hold a course that was a community ed course. It was after school hours, and we would all share our dreams, and we'd learn about them and talk about them. Have you done anything like that, where you've had a group where you everybody shares their dreams and sort of enlighten each other and so forth?
Well, in many of the seminars I spoke at or conferences over the many years, there were courses, and I taught a little bit about dreams and how to use them to interpret them, and I learned what I learned from some of what some people would call the masters of the Far East and the Near East and the West and wherever, every point of the compass. And so that, plus my own experiences and a lot of reading about these things, and I did do psychology also. It was one of the required courses, which I found very interesting. I did find, however, that it's very it did not make it. It just, like everything in science, you got to be able to duplicate it. Well, let me tell you something about that. I am a scientist, trained as one. I was very good at it when I really did it professionally. And my degree was a summa cum laude degree in chemistry, so I had to be very good at it. But guess what I discovered? We could be very rigid, and we as scientists don't take into account, or didn't. Now they are doing that. We didn't take into account things that we couldn't measure, we couldn't duplicate, and so forth. Now, I have always thought, since the Creator did not duplicate me, there is, and thank goodness for that, there is only one of me on Earth or anywhere else, because I know that I am me. There are, I'm not talking about the fringe cases where people think there's somebody else. I'm talking about regular, normal people. And the thought would go through my mind, since God doesn't duplicate things exactly the way, just like a snowflake or a thumbprint or a voice print, why would we look to measure certain things? Certain things are immeasurable. Now, let me give an example of what I mean about that. We cannot describe certain things. Let me ask someone, anyone who is listening, describe to me the scent of a flower, a rose. Or better yet, describe the color red. Or describe what deep pain in the heart feels like. Let's say, describe how it is when you really love somebody and that love disappears or it's broken off. Or say, what is it that you're feeling? Now, what could happen there? I could approximate what that person is trying to describe. Could say, well, red, they could show me an example, is not this blue thing. Don't give me any images. Just explain, what is red or what is blue? Well, blue is what the sky is. Well, if you're flying really high at night, the sky doesn't look blue at all. It looks black. So if we were flying and I asked that question to describe blue to me, and this is what the sky is, and that isn't necessarily correct. The point I'm getting to, Steve, is this. We cannot duplicate some of these things. We can't even measure some of these things. How do you measure these intangibles like compassion, like love, like anger? You could say that he's very angry. Oh, he's just a bit angry. What does a bit mean? And what does very mean in comparison to the whole thing? You see, so it's a relative thing, and so we have to use our feeling tones to interpret them. Now, here's a simple way to do that. Let's say two people approach me or approach anybody. If you're normal, I mean by that, you are just going about whatever it is you're doing, because again, nobody is normal. We're all different, abnormal in certain ways, certain gifts versus other people who have other gifts. But let's say one is a con man who approaches me, and one is a saint or a very spiritual human being. And by spiritual, we're all spiritual to a certain degree. You remember in the book called Animal Farm, where it says all of them are all men are created equal or something, but some are more equal than others. So we have degrees here of sanity and degrees of awareness and so forth. But these two people approach me. And one starts telling me in his best voice, his most honest voice, about this type of investment and so forth. And the other one, the saint, the con man, tells me that. And the holy man tells me something else. There will be a feeling within me if I'm aware that this guy is a con man, and not to believe one word, and the other guy is probably right, but I'm not going to bother with any of this. I'm not going to get into it. Now, you might say to me, Steve, or to whoever is listening to this, might say, well, you must be very special to be able to detect that. No, we all can do that. Let me tell you where the problem comes in. I mentioned words like compassion, love, kindness, and so forth. There are also other words. Now, if no matter how normal I am, how focused I am, if I am overcome with words like greed, see what's going to happen there? I will look at that con man telling me this, and I'm going to be thinking, I don't see him anymore as a con man, but I see this as an opportunity to be greedy and make a lot of money. And so I misjudge, and I put $10,000, $100,000 into it, and a year later it's all gone. And I would sit back and say, you know, I knew, I felt something wasn't right. But you see, we let other things that we can't measure come into play. So that's what I mean by trusting our feelings in dreams. Now, I have had dreams that are meaningless. Actually, I have had dreams that were frightening, but I chose to make them meaningless. Let me show you how I do that. Let's say I drive on this one road every day to go someplace, and this one night I have this horrible dream. This dream that I'm driving, and all of a sudden there's a big sinkhole. For those who don't know what that is, it's a giant hole that opens up that could swallow trucks and cars and houses. And that this hole opens up in the highway, as we have seen in some places in Florida and California and even here in Georgia. And if I keep driving, I'll fall into that sinkhole. Let's say I had a dream about that. How can I change that event? Well, very simply done. The next morning, take a different route to wherever you were going to go. Just bypass that area. And you might do that and find out later on that nothing happened, which is okay. But what if that did happen and you don't know the difference when or if? And it is very possible, again, based on what we had said a few days ago or a few sessions ago, if we can manipulate time and events, and I think one of our topics is going to be event formation and how we use that ability. If we can manipulate these things, perhaps by dreaming that, we took some subconscious, we made some subconscious decisions that changed the reality. Remember when we were talking about time, space, and going back in time, and the back to the future thing, and your grandfather had an accident when he was a little boy and was never born, so how could you be around changing the entire future? Well, the same thing probably could happen in a much more playful way in dreams, because you could revise it if you don't like it. If you have a terrible dream, you could just say, okay, I want to dream a good thing about this situation, where instead of the sinkhole opening up, somebody notices that there's going to be a problem. That person calls the public works department. The public works people come out and say, oh my goodness, thanks for that call. If you hadn't told us about this, we wouldn't have known, and lots of cars would have just fallen into it. See where I'm going with this, Steve? It's all tied together.
Yes, that actually is fascinating, and I love how it all ties in together. It all ties into a nice, neat package, and it's all wrapped up with the wisdom that you bring to the table. So thank you for that, John. And here's another question that I personally find fascinating. This is from a man who identifies himself as Mr. Isaacson from Tel Aviv, Israel, and he says, in the movie The Matrix, the main character, Neo, awoke from an artificially induced dream. I often wonder if we are in some sort of dream, even when we think we are awake.
Yes, that's the magic of this whole thing. Remember the thing I said about during the day when you're focused on what you're doing in the physical world, whether it's working or walking or whatever, and you look up into the heavens, you don't see any stars. But where did they go? They didn't go anywhere. If you were to go deep into a mine where the sunlight is blocked out and you look up, you will see faint stars at midday. So, yes, both things are happening at the same time, and then it comes back to choice again. Which do we choose to do? There are people, and I've met some of them, who say, okay, I'm going to try to get a dream about that. By the way, the Aborigines of Australia talk about the dream time and how they are able to travel and know what's going on way before any Western personality could do it. So yes, I agree that there's a mystery and a magic and a joy to all of these things. There is curiosity abounding in it all, and we can sort of train ourselves. And people say, well, you know, you aren't a horse or a dog or something to be trained. Well, we're all animals anyway, and we are all trainable. The thing is, we can be our own trainers. Start by very small tasks. Don't start today saying, I'm going to train myself to walk on water and then try to walk across the lake. I think you're going to become very wet and disappointed. But you could start training yourself to do little things. When I was in college, I actually completed a 4-year degree in a little less than 3 years. And that's not because of any brilliance on my part. I think I was as ordinary as anybody, but because of using certain systems. One of them was I noticed all my friends and classmates and so forth were studying, you know, studying until 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And they wouldn't do much, and they will cram on the last day of for exams and so forth. And I thought, I want to do that. I get sleepy. I like my sleep. You know, don't bother me. I want to sleep. It's normal to sleep. In fact, it's good to sleep. So I can't stay up from 1 in the morning to 3 in the morning and do that. Now, that doesn't mean people who can do that aren't great. They are fantastic. I wished so much I could do that, but I wasn't going to do it. You know, if there was a nuclear war, I'd do it. But there wasn't any nuclear war, so I wasn't going to do it. So what I did was I trained myself in between classes, and sometimes you had a free class, to put my head down on my desk and take a 10 or 15 minutes nap, instructing myself to wake up at exactly 10 minutes or 15 minutes and be refreshed. For the first few times, I woke up groggy, and it's not, the logic comes in. The next class is going to be great, but maybe I should just kick my shoes off and lie down on the bed and sleep through the next class. That will feel so good, and the temptation was there. And I thought, no, I'm going to force myself, and I'm going to be a little groggy, and I'll go to class, and I'll come back, and so forth. After about a week, an interesting, wonderful thing happened. At will, I'd put my head on my desk, I'd sleep for 10 minutes without any alarm clock, without anything, and I'd wake up totally refreshed. And I used that habit throughout my college years, both undergraduate and graduate schools. And by doing that, I had a lot extra time. Now, did I create time? No. I had enough time as everybody else had. I just used that time differently by training myself to do a few little things. Here's another thing I did to show you. I'm just giving this example to show people that we can teach ourselves to do things if we don't think those things are impossible. If we believe that they are possible, and I can do them too. So I remember one of the things I do when I wanted to review for an exam, I started training myself to get up half an hour earlier than everybody else, or an hour earlier. I know, again, all my friends would sleep until 5 minutes before class. They'll jump out of bed, put their shoes on. I think they did remember to change their clothes. Just rub their eyes, and they'll rush to class, so forth. I got up a little earlier, and I got really, really quiet in my mind. And by doing that, when I got to class, I was so sharp. So sharp, I could remember what was talked about. I would take my notes, and I'd come back, and I'd just close my eyes for 10 minutes. So the same thing with the dream time. Let's start by practicing. I am going to try to see if I can't get some dreams. If you think you don't remember them, just have the self-talk, because the subconscious hears everything you say. It's designed to be your servant, to serve you, to fulfill your wishes. It doesn't really, as far as we know, there may be instructions from higher sources, but it doesn't really tell you what you should do. It just executes your commands. And I'll tell you one thing about the subconscious, it can't take a joke. So if you think to yourself, that's a lot of nonsense about dreams, who in his right mind would dream about, would give any credence to dreams? Who would ever believe that? Who would want to even think of fooling around with such a thing? Well, I'd like to give you a few examples right now, if you don't mind, Steve, do you?
I don't mind at all.
The thing we call the sewing machine, it actually changed the nature of Earth, because what it did, it changed the way of sewing clothes from somebody sitting down and just putting this thread through day after day, hour after hour, day after day, working so hard, and there was such a demand, until a guy by the name of Elias Howe, H-O-W-E, I don't know if you call it Howe or Ho, but let's call him Elias Howe. Because I try not to mispronounce anybody's name, but with a name like mine, you can see where I could goof every once in a while. So Elias Howe was trying to invent something that would do this mechanical sewing for women, to get them to be so much more efficient, so much faster in sewing clothes or cloths. And he tried this and he tried that, and he'd have the machine perfected, or that's what he thought, until he'd try it and the needle would break or the thing wouldn't work, until one day, this is what legend says, and this is what, check it out anywhere you want, has come down to us, that he had a dream. He had a dream that he was being chased by a bunch of natives, and they all had spears that they were throwing at him or going to throw at him, and he turned around as he's running and he looked at the spears, and they all had holes in the tip of the spear. This is in a dream. Now, there are different versions than that, and we can't go back and find the exact thing. However, it's close enough, whatever version, this is what happened. And he woke up and he said, ah, that's the problem. I've been putting the hole at the back of the needle, because that's what we always did. But here these spears had the hole at the tip of the needle, and that's what he did. And that was the creation, the invention of the thing we call the sewing machine. And he knew guys like Singer and so forth, who later on, they all put this thing together, and it changed the face of Earth.
John, great example there of the sewing machine. Do you have any other examples?
Oh, there are lots of them, lots and lots of them. And the reason I'd like to give some of these is because they will show people how very real and very useful this is. Now, some of them, there are certain things I think. When I was much younger and not well aware of a lot of things I learned later, I thought that we were 100% responsible for everything that is in our lives. Everything that came to us, we created them all. You know the old saying, we create our own reality. And I think that's very true. But I think there is a small percentage that has to do with the entire world situation at times, or your personal world, that we just know this is going to happen, and there is nothing we seem to be able to do about it. One case was with my wife's death when she was only in her 30s. I had a frightening dream about a year before, and I put it away totally, and I remember saying, oh my gosh, this whole thing is destroyed. And I saw her favorite purse, handbag, whatever you call those things, that floating down the river, and I felt so horrible, and I thought something terrible is afoot. I wasn't to know that in the not too distant future she would have had to leave. No matter what I did after we found out that she had cancer, no matter what we did, And we had a year or two to do whatever we can. Every treatment, nothing did it. Nothing changed it. Now, I always thought, hey, couldn't we have changed that? And then one day I met somebody who said to me, no, John, there are certain things that are so set. You agreed upon them. Both parties agreed upon these things way before they got here. There are about 3 or 4 or 5 events in our lives that we will come upon that we will find extremely difficult to change because of pre-agreed situations. Now, that's a whole lot another story, so we aren't going to get into that. What I want to get back to is this certain person, a president of the United States, called Abraham Lincoln, had a dream one night, and he dreamt that he was going down in the White House and walking, whether there's a basement there or not, or whatever it is, and he saw this coffin. And he wondered to himself, he says, I wonder who is in that coffin? Who died? And he walked up to it and he looked at the face and it was his face. And history records that he told some close people about it the next day. It wasn't too long afterwards that he was lying in that coffin and Booth, the assassin, had taken him away. Those are certain dreams that you get a forewarning, like what we said earlier, the bow wave effect. Another one, being a chemist, I remember some of these things. Kekulé, the scientist, had a dream. He had been trying to find the formula for the benzene ring. Forever, there was no such thing as ring chemistry, where atoms would join together and form a ring. All they had were long chains, and he knew something was wrong about benzene. It didn't exhibit the properties of what normal chemistry would do. And then he had this dream that he saw a bunch of snakes, 6 snakes, dancing in a circle, and they were locked tail to head. And it was like a ring. And then he remembered when he woke up, 6. That's the answer. 6 carbon atoms in the form, each one joined together with their hydrogens on them to form a ring. And thus was born one great, great part of chemistry called organic chemistry. And that was a dream. Dmitry Mendeleev with his periodic chart of the elements. Conrad Hilton, who would dream what properties he should buy. To this day, people notice the Hilton hotels. He had dreams about them. Sir Paul McCartney, who in 1965 had a dream of a tune, which became the tune for the song called Yesterday. He had it in a dream. Stephen King claims that many of his novels were written from material from his dreams. Anne Rice, you want to go way back? These are modern ones. You can go to biblical times. Joseph in Egypt, where he interpreted the Pharaoh's dreams, and it saved his life and made him the second most powerful man in Egypt. So dreams can be very useful. Those are some of the examples I wanted to call to the audience, just so they know there's a practical side to all of this.
Well, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, many times, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have been through this many times, I will have a challenge and it'll be something that's weighing on my mind and I'm wondering what to do. And the answer comes to me in a dream and I wake up the next day and I have the answer. Have you had experiences like that? Can you explain how that happens?
Yes, of course, that has happened to me. And the thing that occurs at times, it seems to happen, you could watch the dream as a picture, as a movie. You could be involved in it, and it will seem to take time. And yet, you can have the entire dream of 5 days' worth of events in the period of 5 minutes in your sleep time. So if you were to look at that, you'd know for sure this isn't normal time. Like one great scientist said, something strange is happening out there, is going on out there. And this is one of those parts. So there are times you might have a little dream and you wake up in the morning, and I think this is what you meant, I hope this is what you meant, and you have the entire solution to the problem.
Yes.
this is exactly like those examples I gave, what some of these guys had. They woke up from the dream, and there was a solution in one split second. Now, I can go further and theorize that, you know, since this is all happening in an area we can't prove much about, well, Harry Turan's theory is maybe the answer and the question are together. They're orbiting one another like twin stars almost. And one is somewhat attached to the other. And if you don't deny that answers and questions are there together, and you believe that to every question there is an answer, you might find that you're creating a space, quote unquote, where you can pose the question and get the answer because it exists at that point. Let me explain this in a little, a very simple mathematical way. Does 2 times 3 equal 6? Yes. I mean, in any language, in any place on earth, in any field, anything, 2 times 3 equals 6. Where was the answer 6 before I gave it to you? It already existed. All I had to do was to focus on the answer. Does that make sense? It existed already, simultaneously with the question. Now, somebody would say to me, yeah, yeah, John, that's great. What does that have to do with ordinary life? Well, you know, my friend, here is what it has to do. You get a problem about paying a bill. You get a problem in health. You know, there are only 3 problems, by the way, money, health, relationship. You have a problem, it means, if you take this analogy a little further, it means there's an answer to it. Where is the answer? Right there, orbiting the question. What you've got to do is ask the right questions, and you will get the right answers.
John, very well put, as always. Thank you so much for that. And I look forward to continuing to learn more about dreams from you as we continue on.